south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. Before I get on with the show today, I've got a little announcement to make. Now, I know most of you who listen to my show and Richard Martin's show, well, it's you guys and gals who eventually want to get out of the U.S. and become an expat. I mean, why else would you be listening to me blather two times a week on the subject? Anyway, as you certainly know by now, every so often I offer an expat wisdom seminar down here in Latin America, and so far there's been a lot of interest. They've all filled up, and I even end up with people on a waiting list. And believe me, a lot of people have been disappointed because they couldn't make it for one reason or another. In fact, I haven't even announced, for that matter, even planned my next seminar yet, and I've already got nearly a dozen people on the waiting list ready to put deposits down. And remember, I only can take 24 people. Otherwise, it gets out of hand and you lose the personal touch. And besides that, those small boutique colonial hotels that I like so much almost never have more than 30 rooms. Now, in the last year or so, since I've been doing these seminars, I've gotten plenty of emails from people who say they'd love to attend. And like I said before, for one reason or other, they just haven't been able to swing it. Whether it be the money, the scheduling, or the time you have to take off work, I hear a lot of reasons why people just can't make it down on the dates I've planned. And related to that theme, I also get a lot of people asking me if I'm ever coming up to the States to do some kind of seminar or an expat wisdom presentation or two. Well, of course, I could never do my whole seminar because you do need boots on the ground here in Latin America to do that. Because, you know, if I came up to Cleveland, we'd have to skip the business, the real estate, the IT, and the healthcare part of the tour, and all those boots on the ground activities like the maquilas, the markets, the malls, the shopping centers, the coffee plantations, the restaurants, meeting the locals, and just your general slogging around and exploring as a group down here. Now, I have been toying with the idea of organizing an abbreviated fast-track introductory seminar at a couple of selected locations up in the States. You know, give you the basic bullet points and give you some inside tips and show you some tricks on how to retire like a king or queen down here on just a plain old Social Security check. Basically, show you how you can still live a first-world life or retire on $1,500 a month. And at the same time, have absolutely first-world health care provided in the deal. So that said, here's what me and my expat wisdom crew have in the works. We have a plan to reach out to you expat wannabes closer to home, closer to where you live, that is. Now, a good friend of mine who's a part-time expat, a guy who's been to my seminar down here, and he has two separate thriving businesses on the coast of Nicaragua. He's one of those expats that loves beachfront coastal living, as opposed to where I'm at in the Altiplano. And you know, it seems like expat wannabes are split half and half between sun and fun and sand and having that eternal spring-like weather in the Altiplano. And I say to each his own, you know? Anyway, Brandon's a perfect example of the kind of guy who on his own has been able to make a successful transition from being stuck on that treadmill up in the first world to having a much more free and easy life down here in Latin America. Not to mention things in Nicaragua, like Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, for example, are dirt cheap. In fact, so cheap sometimes that you have to do a double take when you see the price tags. And Brandon's just a young guy, in his 30s, and he had the foresight to see what's happening in the States and had the balls to come down to Nicaragua and start a couple businesses all by himself, too. And he didn't come down here 20-something years ago like I did. He just started doing his expat thing a couple of years ago, which makes him a great resource for expat wannabes who are just about ready to make the plunge themselves. So here's what we're thinking. If you're interested in taking a half a day to one day expat fast track seminar that's guaranteed to get you one step closer to becoming that expat I'm sure you all want to be. In fact, it'll give you more than a running start at it. And if you need a little push or encouragement, this could be the perfect thing for you. So now, instead of spinning your wheels up in the States or in Europe for that matter, waiting for things to get worse up there, and they will, and you know it. Instead of getting depressed about it, do something. You could attend one of these short expat wisdom fast-track seminars and hear it from the horse's mouth, from an expert expat like Brandon in the States and my friend Robert Culpepper, who you probably know from the Expat Wisdom website. And Robert, who, of course, is an expert expat too, has lived with his family in Panama, Costa Rica, and now in Europe. And Robert will be doing a one-day expat fast-track seminar in London for all those Europeans who want to make a go of it as expats in Latin America too. And as you know, Europe is falling apart even faster than the U.S. these days. Europe is full of wannabes too. And like you guys, they need to get their ducks lined up and don't know quite how to go about doing it. And that's what these short, half to one-day seminars will be focusing on. So that's the idea, but I do want to gauge how much interest there is out there and how spread out everyone is up north so we can start organizing these things. So if you're interested in coming to a short seminar like that, just send me an email at theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com. And if there is enough interest, you'll be hearing a lot more about it shortly. And hopefully we can get a few of these mini seminars in and get you all prepared to come down before the next big crisis, whatever it is, drags the U.S. and Europe further into the crapper. So again, if you're interested in how to avoid all that, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com or johnny@expatwisdom.com. Oh, and don't forget to tell me what city you're in. Now, in the last few shows, I spoke a little bit more about healthcare issues down here in Latin America. And just to finish up what I couldn't get to, I want to talk a little bit now about health insurance plans for expats and gringos when they come down here. Now, you already know that there really is first world healthcare down here, especially in the mid to large size cities all throughout Latin America. And you also know that in very lightly populated countries like Belize and Suriname and Guyana, the healthcare systems are lax and very spotty simply because the population can't afford or support big first world style hospitals or clinics. What with all that expensive technical equipment coming from the first world. And for that matter, any country that doesn't have its own medical school, for example, Belize, they have a host of problems when you're looking for consistent first world style medical care. Because you see, a country without a medical school has to count on all of its doctors, nurses, and specialists to somehow find their way down to that place from another country. Not an ideal situation at all. Which is another reason I don't recommend Belize, except for all but the most adventurous expats. However, in the rest of Latin America, in any city over 50,000 or more, you can practically always find first world healthcare facilities and a decent percentage of doctors who did their specialist training up in the first world. And like I said, if you come down to one of my expat wisdom seminars, I'll show you exactly what I mean. In fact, I'll take you by the hand myself and walk you through some very good clinics and medical facilities to prove to you that it's first world medical care all the way. Okay, by now I think I've convinced you of that. But what's it cost? Well, we talked about that before too. If you're off the tourist trail and you don't have insurance, you're looking at a quarter to a sixth of what it would cost you up in the first world for the same medical treatment. And that's why so many gringos and expats down here in Latin America have decided not to have insurance at all. They choose to go raw and pay as they go. For example, one expat friend of mine was in the hospital last month for 5 days, and he doesn't have insurance. He said it cost him about $180 a day complete, and that included the room, the medicine, the doctors, the nurses, the works. So his whole bill, without insurance, came to slightly under $1,000 for 5 days in the hospital, which is what some people pay for their monthly insurance premium up in the States. And here's another thing. You know, up to about 2 or 3 years ago, nearly all my expat friends did not have medical insurance. Why? Because it simply was too hard to get or wasn't available to expats or non-residents. Now, of course, if you're an expat and you work for a big transnational company like Quaker Oats or Walmart, and you're working down here because you signed a contract with the company up in the first world, well, of course, the company's going to supply private health care insurance for you because that's what's expected when you have a job like that up in the States. But expats down here working for transnational companies, that's the oddball case. In fact, I would say only maybe 1 in 50 expats that I've met is on contract to a first world company like that. So chances are that's not going to happen with you. Anyway, like I said, up to about 2 or 3 years ago, you could get health care insurance if you were an expat gringo. But only if you had residency in a Latin country, a process that could take anywhere from a year to 3 years. And back then, a gringo expat could get health care insurance if he or she actually worked for a local company and got paid a salary. And in that case, your manager or your boss would add you onto his health care coverage. But you see, the thing is, only a tiny percent of Latin American companies have healthcare plans for their employees. If you could believe it, way under 5%. So that option was generally an impossible dream too, back then. But in most big Latin cities, there have always been a handful of insurance companies that mostly do car insurance, and they always had a very small division that took care of healthcare insurance too. And believe me, up to a few years ago, very few people knew that these car insurance companies even offered healthcare insurance because it just wasn't on the table. The Latin population just wasn't interested, and 95% of the population couldn't afford it anyway. And even now, only 5% of Latin American people are covered by any insurance at all. And the vast majority of that 5% are people covered by car insurance. And not because they want to be. It's because, like in the States, if you buy a new or used car and finance it, the finance company or bank forces you to get insurance coverage so they don't lose their investment if you get it stolen or get in a big crack up. And it's always included in your monthly payment. So when you've paid it off in full, it's your call whether you maintain that insurance policy or not. And guess what? Down here in Latin America, you guessed it, people just don't. Oh, and by the way, even crazier is the fact that most Latin American countries mandate car insurance if you drive a car. It's the law. And yet, only about 5% of the people have it. So what happens when you get into an accident? Well, as usual, nobody's checking and nobody's enforcing. And that means a lot of cash deals go down when you get a fender bender, if you know what I mean. But now, surprise, surprise, the first world lag time effect with insurance has been catching up slowly but surely in Latin America. And it's all in our favor. I mean, it's really in our favor. In fact, just in the last year or two, I've been seeing ads for health insurance in all the big Latin newspapers. And I tell you, in all my years down here, I've never seen that before. That's full family coverage HMO style, just like up in the first world, with some amazing differences. For one, the cost. It's not unusual to get a full first world style HMO plan for $50 a month if you're an individual, and $60 to $75 a month for your whole family, including grandma and grandpa too if they're living in the household. And also, there are some plans down here that don't even require a physical, no matter how old you are. And pre-existing conditions? Well, they'll ask you about that, and you'll have to put that down on your application form. That is, if you feel like it, because no one's checking on that stuff either. Now, I'm not recommending that you be dishonest here. And mostly, it doesn't matter anyway. Because, like it says in most policies, pre-existing conditions will not be covered for the first 6 or 9 months. Which means after that, everything's covered. So you just have to bide your time during the waiting period. That's all. And another thing, a lot of these plans will carry you to age 99. And some of the plans do not have escalating payments. In other words, some will raise your rates a bit when you hit 40, and then again when you hit 50 and 60, and so on. And other plans don't have escalating clauses like that at all. However, like any insurance plan, there's no guarantee that when the renewal comes up, they won't raise the whole insured group. I mean, after all, you have to account for inflation. But that happens with all insurance companies, so nobody knows. And about those pre-existing conditions, well, there are some plans that don't even bring up the subject at all. Once you sign up, you're automatically in, no matter what. Now, let me explain that a bit. One of the most amazing things about these new healthcare plans that have been popping up left and right is that quite a number of these insurance companies are owned by big banks. And the way you get on the plan is open a bank account at one of these big banks. And that's it. That's all there is to it. Then you and your family are automatically eligible as long as you sign up for the plan and pay that monthly premium. And actually, what they prefer you do is to deduct the monthly premium from your credit card or your current account. You know banks, anything for a fee, right? Now, I just can't say enough about these insurance plans, and you gotta wonder how they stay in business with such low premiums and absolutely first world healthcare. Not to mention that pre-existing condition kind of fades away, and with some of these plans, you get coverage up to age 99. Well, you know, that puzzles a lot of expats because they just don't believe it. How could that be? How could an insurance company survive like that? With that kind of coverage, doesn't everybody just rush to the emergency room for every little hangnail, like they do in the States? Well, in a word, no. In fact, I proved that at my latest Expat Wisdom Seminar. I brought my group to a first world hospital that has just such an HMO plan like that, and I brought them to the emergency room where there was just one person waiting to get treated. One. And that was a midday visit on a Sunday, no less, a weekend. So how do you go about explaining that, since U.S. emergency rooms are balls to the wall all the time, especially on weekends when there's a lot of weekend drunks and the gangbangers are all out shooting each other up. Well, the fact is, it's that lag time effect again. You have to look at the state of the insurance industry down here like you would have looked at the insurance industry in the 1950s and 60s in the United States, when Blue Cross and Blue Shield were king. They were the gold standard of insurance plans, and if you had them, man, you had no worries and were proud to whip out that card because you had bragging rights. Now, if you were alive back in the 60s to see it, or heard stories from your parents who lived through that era, they too would tell you that in the 60s, even with Blue Cross Blue Shield, which was the best insurance coverage known to man at that time, back then, if you walked into an emergency room, it was never filled. Just like today's private hospital emergency rooms here in Latin America. And how do you explain that? Well, that's because in the 1960s, the average U.S. working person who had Blue Cross Blue Shield, or in fact any insurance coverage, back then a person who had an insurance card was a different kind of person altogether, culturally and socially. These were the hardworking, salt-of-the-earth American people that had their noses to the grindstone. These were tough, no-nonsense factory-working guys who worked their asses off and just loved overtime so they could give their kids things they never had when they were young and even send them to college. Back then, we didn't have the drugs and the gangs and the broken homes, the huge government, the big taxes, and the massive welfare system. That's when people got to keep most of the money they earned. There was no such thing as a 50% tax bracket. Not back then. And the entitled me generation just did not exist back then. It was the Marcus Welby, father knows best and leave it to beaver generation I'm talking about. Those kind of people would not take off work and go to the emergency room if they had a hangnail or a hangover. In fact, it was common back then for the average working stiff to be quite proud of the fact that he never took a sick day. In fact, my own dad and uncles were exactly like that. But the U.S. today? These days, most people squeeze every single sick day they can out of the system and even go for more. And for some, it's sad to say, the goal is not to really work forever, but to qualify for a permanent disability somehow and a permanent check that comes with it. I knew quite a few people up in Chicago who were pulling that one off. People my age, people I went to high school with. That's the attitude now that never existed back in the 50s and 60s. And those same long-gone values exist down here right now in the Latin working classes. So, bottom line, three cheers for the lag time effect. That's what allows gringos and expats to get first-world health care for $50 a month. And all the perks that go with it. Like, for example, totally uncrowded emergency rooms. And in most cases, brand-new state-of-the-art first-world equipment. And often, because of lack of crowds, that stuff barely gets used. Now, I also get emails from people concerned about healthcare asking me if insurance down here is international. In other words, if you get in a car accident, let's say in Honduras, and you had your policy written in Panama, well, would you get covered in Honduras? Now, that answer is a bit complicated. Well, you see, there are actually three or four different types of coverage down here in Latin America, depending on the policy and plan you sign up for. For example, there are a lot of HMOs that only have their affiliated hospitals within one country, and some are only affiliated in one large city. So, for example, if you have that coverage in Guatemala and you have a medical problem in Costa Rica, you're basically out of luck. But remember, like I said, first world coverage down here is 1/4 to 1/6 of what you'd pay for it up in the first world. So if you do end up spending a few days in a hospital in a country outside of your plan's coverage, it's not going to break the bank. And if you don't want to be in that country and that hospital paying out of your pocket, just go ahead and travel back to the country you're insured in, once you're stabilized, of course. And then there's a second type of HMO coverage, which is a regional-style coverage. With that type, you buy a policy that covers you within a region of countries. For example, Central America. If you have a policy like that, you're covered in Panama, Costa Rica, Honduras, Guatemala, Belize, Salvador, and Nicaragua. And if you have regional coverage that you took out, let's say, in Colombia, then you've got full medical coverage in most of the countries in South America. The exception being Venezuela, because the Colombians and the Venezuelans just do not get along. So they don't make many deals like that. Then there's a third type of medical coverage, which is international. And always a little more expensive than the standard plan, but not much. Anyway, if you were to take out a healthcare policy like that with a big insurance company in, let's say, Salvador, and you ended up in the emergency room in Peru, well, sure, you'd be covered. But let's say you had that same coverage and you ended up in an emergency room in Atlanta, Georgia. You do have international coverage, but guess what? You're going to have to pay a big chunk of those expenses out of your own pocket. Because like I said, first world health care coverage is like 4 to 6 times more expensive than down in Latin America. And for example, if a CAT scan down here in Latin America costs $100 and the same thing costs $700 in the States, well, your insurance is only going to cover 100 of it. The reasonable and customary fee where that policy was taken out. And here's another email healthcare question I often get asked. People want to know if their insurance coverage up in the States will work down here. For example, if they end up in an emergency room in Bolivia, will their state of Illinois teacher's health insurance cover it? Well, I know this might sound hard to believe, but there are a lot of hospitals in Latin America, especially on the tourist track. Notice I said on the tourist track. Anyway, some of these hospitals actually advertise in the English-speaking newspapers on the tourist trail saying they accept first-world insurance plans. And of course, it makes sense, since your first-world insurance plan will actually be saving tons of money on any kind of medical claim in the third world, since, like I said, it's a quarter to a sixth of what they'd have to pay if you got hurt or sick up there. Believe me, you're actually giving them a gift. Now, of course, most of the time, if you're in a hospital in a country that's different than the country that you took the policy out in, you'll certainly have to pay cash up front or with a credit card. And then fight it out with your insurance company when you get back home. That's the usual plan, right? But still, your first world insurance company back home will not put up much resistance to paying the bill, and secretly, they probably wish you'd stayed there. So let me summarize here by saying one of the best deals known to man on the planet right now is healthcare insurance in Latin America. And in fact, I think it's one of the best kept secrets in the world. I don't know why expat wannabes, especially older expat wannabes, aren't forming a human chain to come down here right now or even stampeding like cattle in a John Wayne movie. After all, sky-high medical costs are the number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States. And anyone with a chronic disease like Parkinson's, diabetes, arthritis, cancer, you know just what I'm talking about. But it's your call. You can either tough it out and grow old in the States and get bankrupted by the diseases of old age, or you can come down here and live like a king or a queen for $1,500 a month. Though I have to warn you, it might cost you up to $2,000 a month if you have a chronic disease and you need constant care, and you have to hire a full-time nurse 24/7 to live in. Now, I hate to break this to you, but a full-time live-in nurse, an LPN or nurse's aide, might cost you anywhere from $300 to $500 a month. Sorry, but they don't come any cheaper. And if you come down to one of my expat wisdom seminars, I'll show you exactly how to find one. Now, I did mention that a lot of the big banks down here are affiliated with insurance companies or actually owned by insurance companies or vice versa. And in order to sign up for some of these great insurance plans, you have to have a bank account. That's it. And here's the bad news about that. It's getting harder and harder for first world Americans to open bank accounts down here in Latin America. What with all those first world banking and government regulations that banks down here have to adhere to if they've got U.S. clients, many, many banks, in fact, most of them, simply do not want U.S. clients anymore. And that's why you have to have a good relationship with a lawyer in the country you're going to live. Because you see, your lawyer will always be able to get you a bank account even if you are a U.S. citizen. He'll act as your reference, or fiador, as they call it down here. Or through him, you'll create one of those S.A. corporations, a Sociedad Anonima corporation. Then your corporation will open the bank account. And of course, your lawyer will help you fill out all that paperwork at the bank, specifically indicating that you're an employee of that SA corporation, and now you qualify for that insurance. And there are a few other ways to accomplish that too, but you'll have to come down to one of my expat wisdom seminars to get the full scoop on that, and to get those certain tips and secrets I don't talk about on the show. Okay, enough said about that. Now I'd like to talk about something that's been in the news up in the first world lately, and that's Hostess Twinkies. Now, you probably all know the story that the bakers there went on strike and nearly put one of our early favorite junk food companies right out of business. Okay, so what does that have to do with Latin America? Well, I'll tell you. You know who bought the Hostess Twinkie company? The Bimbo Bread Company. That same bread company that I mentioned in a previous show was the Wonder Bread of Latin America. In fact, they actually bought the Wonder Bread recipe. Talk about trying to emulate everything and anything gringo, including the worst that we have. And Latins, as it turns out, like the same smooshy, squishy texture and the happy plastic package it comes in. And I bet the wrapper is more digestible than the bread. And you know, it's sad to see how Bimbo bread has invaded the shelves all throughout Latin America. 20 years ago, it was only in Mexico. Now, I bet you didn't know that Bimbo is the biggest bakery in the world. And they just bought Hostess Twinkies. And that's part of a Bimbo buying spree of late, which includes their recent purchase of well-known, long-time American bakeries like Stroman's, Freehofer's, Brownberry Bread, Thomas English Muffins, and Entenmann's Cakes. And yes, you can find Bimbo bread in certain stores in the States, mostly where Hispanic populations live because it's a Mexican product. And lately, scientists and nutritionists are saying that Bimbo is one of the companies that's most responsible for the steady healthcare decline, including the huge increase in obesity and diabetes in the Latin American public. The fact is, over the last 30 years, the middle and lower class Latin populations have shifted from the traditional meal of cheese beans and corn tortillas to, you guessed it, Bimbo bread. Why? Because it's cheaper than tortillas and has so many preservatives and additives in it that it has about a 300-year shelf life. Just like Wonder Bread. And tortillas only have a shelf life of about 2 days. So that's the kind of stuff that's creeping into the Latin American diet. And why an estimated 75% of the Latin American city population, the urban dwellers, are either significantly overweight or obese. And that's why an estimated 1 in 4 Latins over 50 are either diabetics or undiagnosed diabetics. So, that good old Wonder Bread that we'd slather with peanut butter and jelly when we were kids watching the Bozo show is now owned by a Mexican company, Bimbo. And right about now, every kid in Latin America has got a lump of it lodged somewhere in his small intestine. But here's what you didn't know. Down here in Latin America, about 2 or 3 years ago, it was discovered that Bimbo bread had sawdust in it. And it was in all the Spanish papers down here for a day or two. And I doubt the media in the first world ever picked up on it, which is often the case with news stories down here in Spanish. And you know, when expat Eddie heard about the sawdust, and you know, Eddie owns a number of restaurants, he just laughed out loud and said, "Sawdust? What's wrong with sawdust? I don't get it. In my sushi restaurants, people pay damn good money for a plate of seaweed."
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. Coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.